I'm Rasmus Schuller, and you're listening to the Sound of Loons podcast.
Afternoon or evening, depending on when this finds you. Welcome to the Sound of the Loons podcast. I'm Steve McPherson, and I'm here with Callum Williams. Cal, Minnesota United is not only in the playoffs, but hosting the Los Angeles Galaxy in the first ever home playoff game at Allianz Field. There's some housekeeping we're doing right now. That game is on Sunday, October 20th at 7:30 p.m., and tickets will go on sale to the general public at 2 p.m. on Friday, October 11th. That's this Friday. But, man, I would not bet on many tickets being available by that point. Season ticket members are going to have access to a pre-sale on Thursday, October 10th at 10 a.m. That's the first one. And then members of the Preserve, which is the official Allianz Field waiting list, get access to a pre-sale that same Thursday at 2 p.m. this Thursday. And then people who subscribe to MNUFC newsletters will get access to a pre-sale on Friday at 10 a.m. before the general on sale at 2 p.m. So that's a lot of information. I hope you were taking notes. So the good news is you can still become a member of the Preserve by visiting mnufc.com/preserve, or you can sign up for the newsletters, which is free at mnufc.com/newsletter. Okay, now that housekeeping is out of the way, I just want to make sure everybody knows what's going on with the future, because we get so used to this. We have a schedule. We know the last game we're going to play, you know, at the start of the season. Now this is a new game. We didn't know about this game. But let's look back at Seattle, first as a place, secondly as a game. Your feelings about Seattle qua city to visit as a human person?
One of my favorite Major League Soccer cities to visit. It's a splendid place.
I agree wholeheartedly.
It's very reminiscent of England with the weather, so it makes me feel quite homely.
Sure, yes.
But it was gorgeous while we were there, wasn't it? It was really, really nice.
I guess it was Seattle-ish here while we were away. It was sort of cloudy and rainy, I believe. So.
Oh, well, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it was clear. It was clear sailing. I made that joke for a couple people, saying this is how it always is, right? So,
it was Seattle was great. The city itself offers an array of different things to do. Not that we have much time to do much of it, but it was great. I always enjoy going to Seattle, and the one thing I will say is for our broadcast, I have to say a big thank you to the Sounders organization, who made a lot of things possible for us, i.e., you know, broadcasting on field side and whatnot, and doing the pregame show where we did, and making sure that myself and Kendra, got up to the booth in a timely manner, and all this kind of stuff that they didn't really have to do.
Yeah.
You know, a big thank you to the Sounders, who, for me, remain towards the peak of MLS in terms of the quality of a football club.
Yeah. I really like Seattle as a place. Coffee is very important there.
Yes.
Which I really respect. I really like pine trees. I also like airplanes. And I like the colors blue and green, two of my favorite colors, green being my favorite. I very nearly moved to Seattle instead of moving to the Twin Cities back 15 years ago at this point. So I sort of guess there's some possible universe in which I'm living in Seattle. I could be working for the Sounders. I don't know how. Since I came through the NBA, I don't really know how that would work since the Sonics left town. But
you could be in Oklahoma City right now.
Right. Oh. No offense to Oklahoma City, but that sounds terrible. So it's funny because I was thinking about it as I was there, and you know, when you talk to people and you're like, so where have you lived? You know, and they talk about their time in different places. And I think about, I lived for a year in New York City, and I feel like, although I didn't really like New York overall and want to stay there, it still informed a lot of who I am in some ways. Like, that year was significant. In some ways, I feel like almost moving to Seattle is more significant than living in Connecticut for 2 years, which is, Connecticut's terrible. So the sense that was what I was considering, I sort of, whenever I go to Seattle, I'm kind of like, I can still see myself Portland or Seattle, someplace like that. The Pacific Northwest really agrees with me. So I had a little time. I came in with the team I was planning to go to training, but then it was a little crowded, and I was like, I had set up some interviews with players after training. I was like, I don't really need to go to the actual training. So instead, I hung out, which was nice. I went to the Pike Place Market, which I know is a tourist trap at this point, but it's still really fun. The produce is incredible in the Pacific Northwest. Just vegetables and mushrooms and all kinds of crazy stuff. I went to the Museum of Pop Culture, which is near the Space Needle, and went to the Pearl Jam exhibit, which was a real sort of, you know, mecca moment for me as someone who, Pearl Jam was very significant for me because it's sort of, that was the first stuff I learned on guitar back in the day. And it was crazy. It's funny to see some of that stuff that is like a physical object, not even just the Pearl Jam stuff, but I was struck by, there was a Jimi Hendrix exhibit, and there's, you know, a guitar in a glass case, like a white Stratocaster. And it's like, Jimi Hendrix played this guitar at Woodstock. Like, this is what he played the Star Spangled Banner on. And I'm a guitarist, and I have guitars, and they have associations for me. And I look at my guitars, and I see dings where this guitar fell, or I know why this little chip is out of it, or it's discolored this way, or things like that. It has a sort of wear to it. Seeing the physical objects that people like Jimi Hendrix or you know, other musicians like that, like, this is what they worked on. It was kind of... kind of oddly resonant for me. I really enjoyed it. So I heartily recommend the Museum of Pop Culture to anybody.
Okay. Well, next time I go to Seattle, if we have time.
It's a short walk. It's just, you follow the monorail. Like, if you walk, we were on Pine Street, you walk up Pine Street, there's a monorail, you just follow it all the way to the end. So had some good food. I went to Chan, a Korean restaurant that
fabulous place.
Durky recommended. Mm-hmm. And he finally came through. That Portland steak didn't really land. So it was terrific. We went out with Ian Fuller, assistant coach Ian Fuller, which is, I wanted to bring this up as a soccer talking point. And I brought this up, if you listen to, I did a couple of interviews with Ethan Finlay and Michael Boxall and Vito Minone. And I think I mentioned this to some of those guys, if you listen to that podcast. But Ian brought up something that I found really interesting that I had not really considered. It was sort of a holistic way of thinking about the season that I had not fully considered, which was that he was saying he felt that a real key component of how the team has felt and how the season has felt has come from the young guys, you know, Chase Gasper, Hassani Dotson, Mason Toy, sort of stepping up in this moment alongside the veterans that you bring on, like Aiko Parra and Ozzie Alonso and Vito Minone. Like, them having good seasons as vets, leading the team and sort of setting the tone, coupled with the young guys coming in and learning how to do it and then stepping up, you sort of need both of those things at the same time in order for Minnesota United to have, I'm not going to say success, but I'm going to say the kind of season they have now. Like, I think about, imagine if you didn't have guys like those young guys who stepped up into spots where they needed to play when, you know, when there was a need for it and then done really well and been willing to do that. You have a team of veterans who are doing a good job, but are older and, you know, need rest, or they, some of them have achieved, you know, like they're going on international duty and things like that. It sort of messes that up. On the flip side, if you don't have those veteran guys, and even if you have good players coming out of the draft who are young and they're doing well, they're maybe not, they maybe have too much on their shoulders, or they don't have enough guidance for it. And I sort of like that, what Ian was sort of saying about, that's sort of the whole shape of the team, is this combination of having these veterans who are responsible and leaders and also still playing well, but then also these young guys who are stepping into those roles when they're needed. And I thought that was kind of a beautiful way of putting it.
A lot of the pressure that will come in the way of the young players when they first turn professional is instantly taken off of them by the veteran players. It's simple as that. And they've been given the ability to go and play the way that they have done. A lot of the reason is because of the veteran players. But yeah, look, also it's great when the team is playing with confidence as well. You as an individual tend to rise in confidence as well. And, you know, the amount of efforts that Hassani Dotson has been able to put away this season, I don't think he would if he wasn't as confident as he is. And I don't think he would have if he wouldn't have been given the amount of time and space and had the pressure taken away from the likes of Ozzie Alonso, you know? So it's an interesting theory. And whilst I will sort of agree, I still think a lot of this is due to the veteran leadership that is in the locker room right now. Because if you look at the previous 2 years, this wasn't the case.
Right.
And no doubt Minnesota United drafted very, very well. Probably, in my opinion, won the draft if you look at how it's panned out.
Sure.
And then accompanied by the emergence of Mason Toy this season as well. It's been a very good year for the young players, but I am going to remain firm in my stance and say, whilst I think they all have fledgling careers ahead of them, I don't think this happens if Minnesota didn't acquire the veterans that they did.
Right. I absolutely agree. I think that the Now, I think it's to sort of separate the success of the team from the character of the team in some ways. That, like, there's these things are tightly linked, but the Venn diagram is not a complete overlap here. That I think that the most success is this combination we have right now. Second most success would be getting a bunch of good veterans, even if the draft didn't pan out. You know, I think the toughest situation would be if we had not gotten any of these veterans who've become team leaders, and we were just relying on those guys from the draft, right? But I think there's also just something about the obviously the success of the team on the field is what drives people being interested in the team. I mean, I think that's base for any sport. You know, like, it's very hard to get people engaged if the team is not doing well. But I think that I talk to a lot of fans who, you know, they love Vito, they love Ike, they love those guys, but a lot of them really love Hassani and Chase and Mason, and, like, have some of that feeling of, like, these are our guys. I think in a way that, I mean, this is not to disparage veterans coming here later in their careers, and I think they can feel a certain amount of attachment to those guys. But those guys have achieved things for other clubs that were, you know, you look at Ozzie going back home to Seattle, and look at what that reception was there for him. You know, that's 10 years there. He's doing a terrific job for us here. The hope is that, you know, 10 years from now, Hassani Dotson, I don't want him to come back to Minnesota to celebrate the way that Ozzie did, you know, there. But, you know, for that to be Hassani being that guy for the team, yeah. I think that's what a lot of people get attached to. So I like that. I just feel like you're getting a sort of best of both worlds in some ways, regardless of this season itself, but as the team grows over the years, I think. And that's why I kind of like that. So
yeah, the younger players will certainly get better year after year after year. At least that's the hope and expectation anyway. And there's no reason why they can't and won't, particularly if they continue on this trajectory that they've started their careers on. So I think I may very well have said this on a previous podcast, but if not, I'll say it now. I'm absolutely going to need the hot take button.
Oh.
It's so hot right now.
You got it.
I have said this before, and I'll say it again. I legitimately think, having watched him now this season and see him up close and personal fairly often during the week at training and whatnot, and knowing the type of individual that he is, I think genuinely Hassani Dotson could be that next young US player to make the transition over to somewhere like the Bundesliga.
Sure.
I'm not going to put him in the same category as an Alphonso Davies or a Tyler Adams just yet, but right. I think if he has another season or two and he's better than what he has been, it's been a great rookie season for him, in my mind, should be the MLS Rookie of the Year. But if he carries on this trajectory, I see no reason why he can't be picked up by a fairly sizable club in Europe.
Yeah. And that'll be a good and sad day.
Of course it will. Of course it will. But it's
we've talked about it before. This is the shape of U.S. soccer fandom. I mean, this is how we have to understand being involved with MLS.
It's where this league is right now, Steve. And that's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Let's talk about Seattle, the game, a little bit. I also wanted to say, you were mentioning this, the Sounders. I really liked, despite it being a football stadium, they've done as well as any team, I think, to give a feel of we are about soccer when soccer is being played there, which is really great. A very kind of secure, no-nonsense feel to how they present themselves and just how they present the Sounders. There's sort of confidence and an understanding of, like, you know, this team is an equal inhabitant of this building to the Seahawks.
You yes.
know? Which I really appreciate. And just, you know, it's obviously turf and things like that. But the feel was great. And I really enjoyed watching the game. I thought that, again, it's a little, I feel like I'm so spoiled by Allianz Field and how close you are to everything. You're a little bit farther removed, but not as far back as like TCF in the press box. So it feels a little, it feels reasonably intimate, and the supporters did a terrific job. So football stadiums, though, are very big. It took me a really long time to walk around that whole thing.
Yeah, it is a colossus, isn't it? You know, it's unbelievable. But yeah, you won't find an argument from me, Steve. I think the Sounders are a first-class organization. It's clear and obvious that soccer is a big thing there. Always has been, really. But since the Sounders have gone into MLS, it's only elevated the sport there. And you know, there were I think it was just over 50,000 there, wasn't it, on Sunday? And it's no real surprise. It's a big deal in Seattle. And I think you and I, when we got the Uber to the stadium on the morning, I pointed out that there were as many Sounders sort of advertisements as there were Seahawks commercials, and that's, you know, only adding to your point. And it's great. It's a really great soccer market, fabulous city. Who knows, maybe we go there again at some stage in the playoffs. Who knows?
It could be on the docket. All right, so let's talk about the game itself. What was your feeling overall? I found it a little difficult because so much of following that game was wrapped up in following other games at the same time. You know, it's sort of, the game was, it could never just sort of be like sui generis. It could never just be its own thing. It was always connected to this other stuff. And so you find yourself feeling like, oh, well, we just need one goal, you know, and not really thinking win. You're just thinking if we can draw, then stay in that second seat. So it's like, the calculus was a little more complicated. How did you feel about the game itself?
I thought the game was very entertaining. I thought Ozzie Alonso was typically Ozzie Alonso, and gave the Sounders a stern reminder of what they're missing nowadays. I thought he was fabulous and was very well deserving of the Burlback Man of the Match. And he put himself about. He made some fabulous flying challenges as well, which were tremendous to watch. He's a fierce competitor, and I thought he was brilliant. Maybe had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder heading back to Seattle as well. So I thought he was fabulous. The issue for Minnesota is that they didn't really have a major outlet. And that's my concern going into the playoffs, and it has been for a while now. I think I've said that to you on a previous podcast. And, whilst I have faith when he's in form in the likes of Mason Toy, I think Angelo did his role well. And he brought everybody else into the play as much as he could, although I thought Kim Keehee marks him very, very well. I just didn't think there was enough from an attacking point of view. I thought Darwin Quintero was poor on the afternoon. Ethan Finlay worked his backside off and was unfortunate with the chance, and I think he'll want that one back, looking back at it. You know, you would expect a player of his caliber to put that away. But look, going to the goal, I didn't think it was great for Minnesota. I think they needed to push out quicker. I think it was O'Para who was the closest to Jovan Jones. I think Ike will be disappointed when he looks back and perhaps should have charged down a little quicker and gotten tighter to Jovan Jones. Great ball in from Jones. Yeah. Really stupendous delivery. But because Ike has been dragged out and he's charging down Jovan Jones, it's almost like that there was a body less in the back line. And if you go back and look at it, you know, Romain Metenier has two players either side of him. Really, if Ike is in position, I don't think Roman Torres has that room at the far post, you know.
Sure.
Now, that's not solely on Ike, because somebody else needs to identify that there's almost four against three in the back there. So somebody has to drop, whether it is Ozzie or Jan or Hassani or somebody like that. Somebody has to drop and help out. And to leave a man as open as Roman Torres was is criminal, in my opinion. And, as I said, the Sounders, I thought, gave a good account of themselves. But the ball in was splendid. And Roman Torres, did well to make the run. And you're not going to miss from that sort of angle.
Yeah. I sort of felt, it felt a little bit like, it felt reminiscent of some other MNUFC losses this season. I don't want to go so far as to say it's, I don't think it's really a pattern, but I think it's just a thing that it's actually a sign in some ways of I don't want to say it's a sign of like a good team, but it's a sign of a team that has a certain identity, because I think that it sort of felt like Minnesota United didn't quite get off on the right foot to begin with, came into the locker room and got better, and then as the subs came in, sort of got their way into the game, but then just couldn't quite get over the hump. And I feel like we've seen that a couple times, like where there's, and this is sort of, in some ways, this is inherent in the nature of soccer, right? Like, you show your cards at the beginning of the game. You're like, this is our formation. This is what we've got out there. Each team just throws it down. And you hope that you've made the right choice. Like, if you think about the 3-5-2 or 5-3-2 against LAFC, that was the right choice. You played the correct hand that game. This might have been one of those situations that was a little more like, you know, the cup final against Atlanta United, where you this was again the 4-3-3, which I have to mention again. You say this is what we're going to go with, and then it just doesn't seem to quite be doing what you need. And some of that is on individual players. I would agree about Darwin Quintero. I don't know how much of that is, obviously we've seen his form go up and down dramatically. It's been a very up and down season. He's also playing out on the left wing, and that's not really where he likes to sort of set up. We obviously saw him. He's given a free rein most of the time to move around the pitch. But again, his position is out on the left wing in that formation. So, and then it went to a 4-4-2, basically.
Essentially, yeah.
With Toy and Angelo up top, which was interesting. I don't feel like we haven't seen that. We haven't really seen that look so far this season.
No, we haven't really. We've seen a sort of close version of it, but not to this standard where the two center forwards are essentially alongside each other.
Yeah. Which I'm interested in. I mean, the idea, we tend to talk a lot about Angelo and Mason as being oppositional forces and delivering different things. And, you know, what do you want up top? Do you want that sort of big guy who's going to hold up the play and let guys move in around him and distribute it? Or do you want a guy who's fast, who can make those runs in behind? You sort of get both of them when you have those two up top.
You do. And when you don't have a number 10 on the field, it's probably the most sensible formation to play. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, taking Darwin meant that we didn't. So I thought it was good. It, you know, another centre forward on the field is obviously a sign of intent, and Minnesota needed to go and try and get something. So you also need an element of solidity in the centre of midfield, and I think that was still there. Despite Grgic leaving the field, I thought Hassani and Ozzie Alonso did very well. Look, I mean, it was a decent performance, but as I said, the main issue for me was that there was a lack of a major outlet. And as I said, I am assuming they're going to try and address that in the offseason.
Yeah.
They need a centre forward that can not only hold the ball up, but could also press as well. Minnesota haven't had that yet. If you look at the centre forwards that Minnesota have had in MLS, Ramirez didn't do that. Danlady still is capable. He's fast and has decent upper body strength, but he has his own issues at the moment. And I wish him all the best and hope it really, really works out for him, because I still think there's a player in there. And then you've got, you know, Angelo and Mason who share the roles that I've just mentioned, but they're missing the other one. So,
yeah.
It's going to be interesting to see what they do in the offseason, but if they can go and find somebody who can do both of what I've just mentioned, it'll cost them money, no doubt, because clubs don't want to get rid of a player like that.
Yes, and as Adrian always says, that's why they get the most money.
Exactly, exactly.
Scoring goals is the toughest thing. So.
Yeah, but look, having said that, I think... moving forwards, I think Mason is somebody who, when he toes the line and makes the right run, is very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
And I am intrigued to see what he does in a couple of weeks against LA Galaxy. There's no doubt Minnesota have options and they have dangerous pieces up front. But I think we all know now in the offseason they've got to go and get somebody who is supreme in that position.
Yeah, what they really need right now, they're relying on one of those guys, you know, going forward into the playoffs. You need to hope that Darwin or Mason or Angelo, primarily, obviously getting more scoring punch out of Ethan Finlay or Kevin Molina would be welcome. One of those three guys has to hit what has been, as Adrian has called, a purple patch. And you don't know. It's 2 weeks, right? You've got a fairly decent layoff. Guys go away for international duty. Other guys are going to regen. Guys are going to get some time in. There'll be some more training. It's just hard to know. It could be that day on the day, you know, like Angelo has a day like he had, you know, when he scored a hat trick in the Open Cup, right? Is that the Open Cup?
Was that a hat trick in the Open Cup?
No. Was it an exhibition? It was. Pachuca? I don't know what I'm talking about.
Are we talking about Darwin scoring a hat-trick?
No, Angelo had a hat-trick.
Oh, sorry, I thought you said Darwin.
No, sorry, I said Angelo.
he scored a hat-trick against New Mexico.
Against New Mexico. Yes.
No, I was thinking, Darwin had a hat-trick?
Yeah, no. Yes. No, Darwin had a hat-trick against Toronto. That was a long time
ago. Yes, that was earlier.
But one of those guys, you know, like having that kind of game, Mason having a game like he had against LAFC or sort of his coming out game against Montreal, like one of those, you're hoping for that. But you can't exactly rely on it at this point. So
No, you can't.
So let's talk about playoffs. Let's move into talking about this. Playoffs. facing the LA Galaxy. Let's talk a little bit about the Galaxy, who lost, you know, two games going into the playoffs. To my mind, they must have one of the highest ceilings and lowest floors of any team that's still playing. The Galaxy, when they're tremendously dangerous, are incredibly dangerous. When they're not playing well, it's just Swiss cheese back there, and they're not getting anything. So, I mean, obviously season long, that is an up and down trend. It's very tough to find yourself doubting. It's hard to doubt the Galaxy's resolve in a playoff game. We have not seen playoffs Zlatan yet in the MLS.
No, we haven't. That's a very good point. I hadn't thought of that. We have seen a big time Zlatan Ibrahimovic over the course of his career, and this will be the first real chance that we have to see it. Look, the Galaxy are greatly improved from what they were in 2018. The big player, Steve, is Christian Pavon.
Yeah.
He's you know, he's come from literally, I kid you not, about this time last year, I was maybe a little further back, I was speaking to an old journalist friend back at the BBC who had told me that Christian Pavon was going to sign for Arsenal, and that Unai Emery really, really liked him, and he had an array of suitors across Europe. There were a couple of teams in Germany looking at him, I think Wolfsburg and I think it was Borussia Mönchengladbach and a couple of other teams that are very good teams across Europe were looking at him. And, you know, fast forward a year, and he's at LA Galaxy. And Zlatan Ibrahimovic came out and said after a couple of weeks, he said, I'm not being disrespectful here, but he's too good for this league. And I thought to myself, well, that's slightly disrespectful, but...
Zlatan is definitely up at the top of the no disrespect, but... And then just saying that doesn't mean you're not disrespecting it, buddy. So
Christian Pavon is an exceptional player, and he is the main problem for Minnesota moving forward. And I know that's strange when you think of a side that has Zlatan Ibrahimovic at their disposal, but Pavon has been fantastic, and Antuna either on the other side of Zlatan as well. They move the ball a lot quicker than the Galaxy that we saw last season. They move it a lot quicker to the Galaxy that we saw in the second game at Allianz Field as well. They've become a lot more dynamic since we've last seen them. So, no doubt it's a huge, huge game. Obviously, the biggest in club history. We can actually finally say that now and put it in bold capital letters. Like, it doesn't get any bigger than this right now.
Yeah.
But it's the Galaxy are the Galaxy for a reason. They have established a worldwide reputation because of their success. And they haven't had success for some time now. There is pressure. There's a pressure playing for the LA Galaxy. I would argue, unlike not any other team in MLS, because I think it's changed now, but for a long time, they were the team that were expectant and they were expected to win all the time.
They had that sort of Galacticos reputation.
They did. So. The era where it was Donovan, Keane and Beckham. Yeah. I mean, and the supporting cast weren't too bad either as well. So the Galaxy, I've said this before, and it's probably not a good comparison now because of where Manchester United are, but I've always seen them as sort of like the Manchester United of MLS in terms of global significance. People know who they are. And by no means am I putting them alongside Manchester United, but my point is that they, for a long time, have been seen as the biggest club and the super club in Major League Soccer.
Yeah.
Now, I think that may very well have changed recently with the birth of the likes of Atlanta United, New York City FC. I think LAFC have given them a run for their money as well.
Yeah.
But there is still a real expectation from LA Galaxy, who still sign superstar players.
Yeah.
And you only have to look at the roster. I've already mentioned a couple of them already. So when you have those types of star players in your team, there is always that expectation. This is going to be interesting, Steve, because it's almost going to be like, again, Minnesota against the world, because everybody, I know every MLS fan, will fancy LA Galaxy simply because of many reasons, a couple of them I've just mentioned, the players that they have. But also, I think everybody will want to see that LA derby in the next round.
Yeah, right.
And I completely understand why they have said that. But what I've learned during my time here is that Minnesotans don't accept things like that. That's not the way they like to do things. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Minnesotans almost operate with a chip on their shoulder. And I think a lot of Minnesotans now will say, right, well, this is our time, you know. Don't just immediately dismiss us.
Yeah.
That's not going to go down very well in these parts.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that'll help from a motivational point of view, and not that the players will need any motivating, but I do wonder if that'll help as well. I hope that the club and this market as a whole is able to deliver that message, mm-hmm. In terms of this is our time now. We can silence the doubters.
Yeah.
We can say shush. We can move forwards. This is us. If you don't like it, that's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really hope that Minnesota United do something in the playoffs and continue to build on what has already been a fabulous campaign for this club.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what happens with Zlatan. Again, the question of playoff Zlatan and this, you know, this idea of like the expectation and him talking about, you know, the playoffs is what you're playing to get to. He does this, he said he didn't really care whether they're at home or on the road. This is where the stakes go up. Because we've seen before that, you know, if he got punched in the mouth, he would sort of sometimes shrink back a little bit. He would fall back into the midfield a little more and play a little more of the sort of distributor role. Like he would just look for other players, then he would make a run in. But if you give him that shot in the mouth, like it would quiet him down a little bit on the pitch. I don't know if that works as well in the playoffs. Like when he wants this. And again, with Pavone, Pavone was not with the team the last time that Minnesota United faced LA Galaxy. So, and Pavone has looked terrific. I mean, I think, as you were saying it, I said this in my head. I don't know if it's right, but it sounds good, and so I'm going to say it, which is that I think that Zlatan is a problem. Pavone causes problems. I think that, you know, like Zlatan in moments, like if he wants to get in and get his head on a ball, it's going to go in, but he's not going to derange your back line with passing most of the time. This is what Pavone is there to do and to create chances like that. So. I don't know. What did you think? That was, it's like one of those things. I said the sentence, I was like, oh, it sounds good.
Well, it sounded convincing. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
the other player who I think we should not dismiss either as well is Jonathan Dos Santos.
Yeah.
Who has been great this year.
Hold up.
Just fabulous. And again, as we have said many a time on this podcast, the holding midfielders don't get anywhere near the attention they deserve, and he's been great. I think Joe Corona coming in has actually been quite good as well. I didn't think he would be as effective, but he's also done very well. Leggett is very effective with the late runs from the centre of midfield as well. And look, I think the other one as well is the new two central defenders. Polenta, I think, had a bit of a rough start to his life in MLS, but he got going in the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Gonzalez coming back from Italy, the Costa Rican international, has given them an element of solidity that they've been lacking big time at centre-half for a while now. So they're a good team. The Galaxy are a really, really good team. And it ain't going to be easy. Make no question of that. It's going to be very, very difficult. But the one thing I would do if I was one of the coaching staff, I would pick up the phone and call our old friend Christian Ramirez and perhaps ask him, so how did you get the better of them? What did you do? I'd perhaps give Daviano a call at Houston Dynamo as well and say, so go on, tell us what were the things that you did? And I'd be very interested to see what the likes of Daviano would say, actually.
Yeah, you know, Do the research, right? I mean, you got to look at what has worked against them, because things have definitely, you know, they're not unbeatable. We saw even LAFC is not unbeatable. So it's one game, all to play for, which is kind of the exciting part of the playoffs nowadays. So, I'm excited to see this new format too. I mean, I think that, first of all, being, you know, with Minnesota United out of the playoffs, I paid not that much attention to the playoffs once they got going. I think last year the other thing is that people should appreciate is that as soon as the regular season ends, the real season begins for a lot of people who work for the club, because immediately you turn around into preparing for the next season and there's a lot of work to be done. So, but they also had that weird layoff, right? That was the thing. They would play a round or two and then you'd have a couple weeks off.
International break. Yeah.
So this is going to be a lot. I feel like we're going to have this 2 week window to sort of build anticipation, and then it's just like boom, 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 and we're going to go right through the playoffs. So that'll be exciting.
It's going to be carnage.
Yeah, I know.
It's going to be carnage, and I really, really can't wait. It's going to be awesome. It really, really is. And before we go, Steve, I'm assuming that's where we're going, I just want to give a quick shout out to an individual who's leaving the club as well. Matt Bennett, or Benno as he's better known, left the club for Aston Villa. He left the club straight from Seattle to head back to the UK. He's been the player liaison for around about 6 months. He joined us from Hull City. and very much enjoyed the Twin Cities. Became a good mate of mine, a guy from the northern part of the country, from Rotherham way. And, you know, he obviously has a tremendous opportunity ahead of him to go to the Premier League and go back home. So wishing all the best to Matt Bennett and, you know, looking forward to seeing what Benno does.
Yeah, happy trails to Matt Bennett. Enjoy that English weather. It's not freezing cold and snowing, which is what we're about
there
to
we
get.
There we go,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, right. So, all right. Well, thanks for joining us. We'll probably have another podcast next week, I would imagine. So
yeah, go on. Let's do another one.
There'll be more stuff to talk about. But thanks for joining us for the 77th Sound of the Loons podcast. Minnesota United's next game is its first ever playoff game on Sunday, October 20th at 7:30 p.m. on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. Be sure to leave us a nice review on iTunes, or at the very least a 5-star rating, and follow the team on Twitter at MNUFC and Cal at CalWilliams.com and me at Steve Entress. Apologies as always to Richard Wagner. I don't even remember what that joke is.
No, me neither.
But I just wanted to have something I'm going to keep saying every time. I have no idea what it is. All right. And remember, there's only one person in this whole world like you, and people can like you exactly as you are.